Willa Kaiser is a certified classical homeopath and also a certified clinical hypnotherapist. She's the founder and director of the Caduceus Institute of Classical Homeopathy in Santa Cruz, California. And that school trains healthcare professionals and other serious students in homeopathic medicine. The Institute offers courses through an extensive audio-visual distance learning curriculum of 5 modules, as well as offering an on-site program. Willa received her initial training in the healing arts during eight years in Indonesia with Shaolin White Crane Association and Grandmaster, you're going to probably have to help me with the pronunciation, Subur Raharjda?
Raharjda, yeah, that's
Raharjda,
right.
Okay. And while in Asia, she also helped establish a healing arts program attended by people from all over the world. Upon coming back to the United States, she undertook a 3-year training program at the Pacific Academy of Homeopathic Medicine and also became certified in classical homeopathy by the Council for Homeopathic Certification. Willa was also awarded a diploma from the Dynamis School of Advanced Homeopathic Studies in 1985, and from 1994 through 1998, Willa is one of the core instructors at the Pacific Academy of Homeopathic Medicine. She's also taught for the Oregon Institute of Homeopathy in Medford, Oregon, at the Five Branches Institute in Santa Cruz, and she's had an active homeopathic practice since 1991, as well as serving as the director of the Caduceus Institute of Classical Homeopathy. You know, I know Willa personally, and I can tell you, on top of being one of the best homeopaths we have in this country, her program is absolutely an excellent way to further or advance your understanding of homeopathic practice. Pretty much everybody I've met who's graduated either from the distance program or who's actually studied with her on site, from my experience, has been extremely well trained. So I think it's one of the better programs we have to offer. And for those of you who'd like to get more information about that program, you can contact her at her toll-free number. That's 800-396-9778. That's 800-396-9778. Her email address is Willa, that's W-I-L-L-A, at homeopathyhome.com. That's Willa, W-I-L-L-A, at homeopathyhome.com.
That's actually .net.
Oh, is that right, .net?
Okay. Yeah.
You know, there's a mistake up on our website, just so you know.
Yeah.
So we should definitely have that changed. So thank you for correcting me about that, homeopathy.net. So, again, Willa, thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to have you join us for this evening.
Great. Well, thanks again.
Okay. So I thought I would I'd start by asking you if you could give us a little bit of historical background on the LM potencies, because it seems, at least to me, that there's a lot of practitioners out there who don't use them. Actually, I would say most of the practitioners don't use them. So I thought maybe if we could talk a little bit about the history, and you can give me a sense of why you think that is, I think it might be useful to the listeners.
Sure. Well, there's a good explanation as to why people don't use it, because it involves a whole kind of mystery story. The LM potencies were only mentioned in the 6th edition of the Organon, which was not even available until 1920. So homeopaths such as Kent, that had such a great influence on American homeopathy, knew nothing about LM potencies because the 6th edition was withheld from them. The 6th edition was actually written in 1842 by Hahnemann. This was during the time that he was living in Paris with his young wife, Melanie. And I'm going to read, actually, for you right from the Organon. It's always good when we're talking about homeopathy to go right to the source.
Great.
So I'm just going to read a footnote to paragraph 246. And what he says is, he's kind of explaining why he's changing things here. He says, "What I said in a long footnote to this paragraph in the 5th edition of the Organon was all that my experience allowed me to say at the time. It was written with the purpose of preventing these adverse reactions of the life principle. However, during the last 4 to 5 years, all such difficulties have been fully lifted through the modifications I have made since then, resulting in my new perfected procedure for 50 LM potencies. The same well-chosen medicine can now be given daily, even for months when necessary. In the treatment of chronic diseases, after the lowest degree of potency has been used up in 1 or 2 weeks, one proceeds in the same way to higher degrees of potency, for in the new LM manner of dynamization, Youth begins with the lowest degrees, as is taught in the following paragraph. So in other words, he's saying this is his perfected procedure, are the LM potencies. However, nobody knew about it really until Pierre Schmidt in the 1950s wrote a little booklet about it. And American homeopathy was already pretty well established, you know, based on Kent's way of doing things using the single dose of the high potency. But the thing that's really important to understand is that Hahnemann was constantly searching, just as he says in the beginning paragraphs of the Organon, for something, for a healing art that's gentle, rapid, and permanent. And he really was very excited about this new way of dosing because it eliminates aggravations, and he says so in that paragraph I just read. So he really felt like he had solved an important problem by introducing LM potencies, and it's really a pity that there were so many complicated things going on that the book actually was hidden for so many years.
Amazing. Amazing to think about how homeopathy's history might have changed or been different had they had access to that sixth edition, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Melanie wanted $25,000 for the manuscript, and because she said it would take her about 2 years to prepare it, and that's how much money she would have made if she had been practicing during that time, and nobody came up with the money, so the book just ended up staying hidden until the 1920s.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And at that time, $25,000 was quite a bit of money, wasn't it? I mean, it was.
Yeah, yes, it must have been quite a bit more. Obviously, more money than it is now.
Sure, sure. Thank you very much. So, I'm curious, could you tell us a little bit about exactly how these are prepared, or how they're different? Because I think people are very familiar in general with, you know, how the C potencies or the X potencies are created. But maybe you could just go through and give us a little bit of a background on how they're actually prepared.
Sure. Well, one interesting thing is that LM potencies are always triturated, even from liquid sources. They're triturated up to a 3C. With the C potencies, some are triturated and some are put in a kind of mother tincture. But LMs are always triturated to a 3C, and then after that, you go ahead, LM of course means 50,000, so you do a dilution of one drop or one grain of the original substance that's already been triturated to the 3C into 50,000 drops of water. So the potency, that's how it ends up being both deep and gentle at the same time, because it's 1 to 50,000 instead of 1 to 100. And LMs go up, as Hahnemann was saying. We go LM1, LM2, LM3. We don't go skipping like we do with the C potencies, 6C, 30C, et cetera. We just go up step by step, one at a time.
Sure, sure. Is there any correlation between those potencies and the C potencies? I mean, do you find the LM potencies are closer to the, you know, the lower dosages or the higher dosages? Or what is your experience with this?
You know, it's an interesting question. I have seen, for example, Luke DeShepherd does make some comparisons there, but I haven't really found that to be so. I just always, as Hahnemann says, start with a low LM, like an LM1, and work my way upward. What I do find is that they have a whole different quality about them. So they are like low potencies in that they don't cause aggravations, but they're like high potencies in that they go very deeply and really to the core issues right away. So it's kind of got the best of both worlds, in my opinion. I also just wanted to mention, in terms of the preparation, Hahnemann prescribed a certain way of making them and of having the client take them. He would have people have a stock bottle of 4 to 8 ounces, and then the person would take a spoonful out of the stock bottle and mix it into some water and mix it up and take a spoonful of that. And I did that for my first few years of LM potencies, and then somewhere along the line somebody suggested to me a kind of adapted way to do it, which is simpler for modern people who sometimes don't want to go through that whole rigmarole. And now I just give people eyedroppers of the remedy, and most people are able to take those directly into their mouth and just take a few drops. But I can also adapt them in other ways if that's too strong for them.
Interesting. You know, I'm curious. I know that there is an aphorism in the Organon. I believe it's 247, where Hahnemann specifically talks about never giving the remedy in the same potency, always,
right,
always changing. And I know that's one of the real arguments for using the LMs, is that, you know, you do change the potency each time.
Exactly.
I'm curious if you think that we could do the same thing, attenuating the potency of the remedy with the seeds by putting them in water, and if you do that, and if there's any similarities or any differences there that you've had any experience with regard to that.
Well, I do follow that aphorism, and so if I do have somebody repeating a seed potency, I frequently will have them put it in water. And for remedies that you can't get in an LM potency because the pharmacy doesn't make it, or you just don't have it on hand, I think a good alternative is to take a seed potency and put it in water and succuss it before each dosage. So I think that's a nice way to do it. You can do it with a 3C, which is what LMs start with, or you can do it with a 6C or a 12C or whatever you like.
And do you find much difference doing that with the Cs as opposed to specifically using the LMs? Have you noticed any differences?
Well, that's a good question. Generally, for long-term constitutional care, I always use LM potencies. Mm. So I can't say that I've noticed a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't looked for it particularly, but I don't have that much experience with the C potency.
Sure.
Repeated daily like that.
Sure, sure. Willa, are there certain situations where you find the LMs are more indicated than others?
Well, I think that for people in general leading a modern life where we're exposed to all kinds of chemicals and overstimulated nervous system by all the technology we have around us and the kind of stress we're under and the busy minds, LMs are good for many, many people. They're especially good for people who are sensitive because LM potencies can very easily be adjusted by putting them in a water glass or even a second or third water glass or stopping them, so you can adjust them very well. People who are on a lot of medications tend to do really well on LM potencies because they work very deeply and you take them every day. And there are people who have a lot of maintaining causes in their life. They're in a job they don't like or a relationship that's not working for them or, you know, stresses that come at them every day. LM potencies do well in that kind of circumstance because it gives them some support, some energetic support every day. Also, of course, people who have been on a lot of suppressive medications in the past, because the medications, of course, you could end up with aggravations, and because LMs work very gently, it's really preferable. Also, of course, people prone to skin eruptions, somebody with eczema that's done a lot of suppression, they would be, I think, a lot better off with an LM than a C potency. So I like them in a lot of circumstances, which is why I end up using them almost all the time.
Are there situations where you would be less likely to use them? Because it sounds like you tend to like to use them in most situations. Are there circumstances where you prefer to use a different type of potency?
Well, you know, I get the occasional case where the person has a really healthy lifestyle, they're in a great relationship, they're happy with themselves, they eat all organic food, and, you know, they just are living a really, really clean life. And if the case is clear, I might just go ahead and do a single high C potency and leave it at that. Sometimes with children also, if children have a really clear case and their families are very supportive and not so much part of the problem, sometimes I'll just go ahead with a 200C. Another way that I do use them more recently is when people are doing a lot of traveling, because I'm not convinced that the X-ray machines and the magnets that you have to go through are not going to antidote the homeopathic remedies. And these days, my clients are having a lot of trouble getting remedies through security without having them either magnetized or X-rayed. So if somebody goes on a long trip, you know, I'll probably give them a 200C and have them leave their remedy at home unless they're able to mail it to themselves. So I'm real careful about that, and that's another time that I tend to use C potencies these days.
Well, you know, I've read in a few different places, and also I've had a couple of practitioners tell me who use LM potencies that they've had an experience where they've seen aggravation at the very end of the course of treatment. Have you had this experience, and can you tell us anything about it that you might be aware of?
Yeah, well, basically, Hahnemann's theory on this, because he's the one who mentions it at first, is that the aggravation comes at the end of an LM potency because it's actually the drug reaction. In other words, the your own symptoms are no longer there, so the drug is actually causing, I look at it as almost like a little bit of approving because the homeopathic remedy is no longer resonating with your vital force, so you just get the resonance of the actual remedy instead of it being interacting with your vital force. So I see that occasionally, but what I end up doing a lot of times is once I do keep people on the LM potencies for an extended period of time, and I determine that based on how long they've had a condition and the severity of the condition and the strength of the vital force and all the kinds of things you would consider normally in choosing a potency. Those are the kinds of things that I consider when I determine how long to keep somebody on a remedy. And then when it seems like they've been stable for a very long time without any little blips, we'll try discontinuing the remedy, and sometimes I'll have them take a single dose of a C potency at that point and see what happens at that point. But I don't always see that aggravation. I've seen it occasionally, but not always.
So you do use both potencies in the same patient as well sometimes?
The C and the LM, yeah. Another way that I sometimes work with the C and the LMs together is, for example, with a child, if they've been on an LM potency that has been working fairly well for them and then it stops working so well, I'll go ahead and use an intercurrent nosode, maybe give them Metarhinum 200C or something like that, and continue the LM potency right along. So you get that kind of flexibility with LMs, is you can actually go ahead and give an acute remedy when somebody's sick and have them at a different time of day, of course, continue taking their dose of the LM, their constitutional, and then, you know, just give them a 30C of an acute remedy to help clear that if it's not clearing from the constitutional. The first thing I would do in that situation is to have them take their constitutional more frequently, and sometimes that works. In fact, if anybody's getting any kind of acute exacerbation or any kind of acute, I'll suggest that they just go ahead and take it, you know, instead of once a day, maybe take it three or four times a day. And frequently that will work. That will help.
Willie, could you just give a little bit of a definition of an intercurrent nosode, because I'm assuming some of the people on the call may not be familiar with it.
Sure.
That.
Yeah. An intercurrent nosode is giving a nosode, which is made from a disease product. Usually when we're talking about nosodes, we're often talking about nosodes that have to do with the miasms. And again, depending on who you're talking to, that can mean different things. But for me, it basically means the three major miasms of the syphilitic, the psychotic, and the psoric. So those would be the nosodes that I would be using. And I also
not tuberculinum?
Well, no, I do use tuberculinum.
Yeah.
I use carcinosin. Those I use also.
Those
are about as far as I go usually in terms of miasm.
You're in the middle of the road, homeopath.
I'm the middle of the road. leaning more toward traditional, I would say.
Okay, good.
So
go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was finished with that.
Can you talk a little bit about how you give those intercurrents?
Sure.
To use the nosode, yeah.
Yes, I will use Metarhinum or tuberculinum. I mean, I'm thinking specifically of children in this line of, I will give them a nosode if it seems like the remedy is not working as well, or just some new symptoms come up that seem related to the miasm involved. I will go ahead and do that and just continue the actual constitutional remedy with the LM at the same time. And that seems to work really well. I don't find that they antidote each other or anything like that.
I see. And the purpose of the intercurrent nosode is to somehow help this constitutional remedy to act because I assume it's the well-indicated remedy, but somehow it's not working, and so you use this to kind of unblock it. Is that how?
Yes, exactly. And I'll sometimes even do the C potencies. And again, this is nothing to do with anything that Hahnemann says. This is pure Willa over here. So you know,
okay.
Don't take it as gospel. But I will also give people a dose of 200 C or 1 mg of their constitutional remedy if they seem a little stuck or they're coming down with an acute. And that seems to help also.
With the LM.
Yeah, it seems to help the person, basically, to sometimes give a C potency as a booster.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I came up with that, but it works.
I know other practitioners who do that as well.
I guess we're all kind of coming up with a type of
homeopathic consciousness to do that, I guess.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it seems to work. In fact, we had a client in our teaching clinic the other day who got her, she's been on Aurum for a while, and it's been a wonderful thing. Her, the nodes on her arthritic nodes on her fingers have gone down, and she's going off her antidepressants, and she's just got a whole new outlook on life. She loves her remedy. And she's been on it for about a year or so, and we recently did give her, her father is dying, and all of her, family issues are coming up, and so we gave her as a booster a dose of 1 mg, and she just loves it. I mean, she got such a response to it and just was very, very happy with it, especially because she had to fly east to go see them, so she wasn't really able to take her LM potency, but she just had a very good response. So that's why I'm not so sure you can say, oh, you know, an LM is comparable to an LM this is a 200C and an LM that is a 1 mg or whatever, because I do find that, you know, a 1 mg can work really well with somebody even who's been on an LM, you know, 7 or 8 or something like that.
Very interesting. You know, Willa, I know that one of the reasons that a lot of practitioners say that they don't like to use the LMs is because of the difficulty of patient's compliance.
Yes.
So I'm curious what your experience with this is and if you have any tips on how to address that.
Sure. Well, one of the things that I like, and that's really the reason I switched to just doing a little dropper bottle, is because I found that the other system was a little too ritualistic and complicated for most people to do in their daily lives. However, taking a daily dose of a remedy, especially when the person is succussing it themselves, and basically the succussing, besides the actual physical action, puts the intention and the energy for healing into the bottle every time you use it. Because when a person takes a remedy and succusses it, unconsciously they are doing something toward their own healing. And that healing energy, I feel, that comes from them and comes from me when I actually prepare and put, you know, I prepare all my LMs myself. I get the pellets from the pharmacy, but I actually prepare them and I succuss them a few times myself. So I'm basically putting that healing energy into it as well. So, you know, that really, them putting that intention out every day as opposed to taking a remedy, you know, one time and then not taking anything for several months, I believe does help them, on their healing. And keeping them focused on healing and, you know, might help them do things like not eat bad things during the day or take better care of themselves because they have actually put some thought and some attention into healing. So people also get very sensitive to their own vital forces when they use this method, especially people who are on animal remedies like Lachesis. Will often have a very physical sensation when they fall off the potency. You know, they'll call me up and say, oh, it's not working, and then I'll give them the next potency up and they'll go, ah. They have a very, very physical sensation which really helps them to tune into their body. Of course, not everybody has that, but the animal remedy people tend to have that more. The plant remedy people tend to find it much more subtle, and they tend to be able to stay on the same potency for, you know, several weeks or even months, whereas very intense animal-type people will often fall off a potency in about 4 weeks or 6 weeks, and sometimes it's very predictable, you know, every 4 weeks, or some people even every 3 weeks they need to go up in potency. and they feel it in a kind of physical way. So all these things help people to understand better what homeopathy is doing for them because they can feel it in their bodies. And that adds to patient compliance. You know, people are used to having to taking something every day.
Sure.
And so it keeps them more attuned to homeopathy, I think. So, you know, kind of in summary, for my clients and my style, the traditional LM, is a little bit too much. In terms of requirements from the client, there are some people who love doing that kind of thing, but a lot of people it's just too much for them to do. But in terms of a little dropper bottle that they just succuss a few times and take a couple of drops, that's not a problem, and seems to actually add to the appreciation of the whole process.
What about having the patient take the dose when they feel that they need it?
Yeah, well, that's a great way to go, and for people who are tuned in enough, and people do get more tuned in as they take LN potencies, so I think that's an ideal way to go. And some people do aggravate on taking this every day, taking an LM every day. I would say fewer than 10% of the clients in my practice have any problem with that. But the ones that do, we work on getting that attunement, and what I'll do is have them take it and then wait until, you know, if it's a remedy that they're feeling a good response from, I'll have them wait until they stop feeling better and start feeling worse, and then I'll have them take it again so that they really, you know, time it themselves according to their body's need. Now, ideally, everybody would do that, and we wouldn't have to say, oh, take this every day or take it twice a day.
Right.
But not everybody develops that sensitivity. But people do become more and more sensitive and more attuned to what they need. And, you know, people will even tell me, they'll come in for a follow-up and say, oh, you know, I stopped taking my remedy last week because I really felt like I had enough. And, you know, I'm always happy to hear that kind of thing because there's nothing better than people tuning into their own vital force for real healing.
That's great.
Yeah.
Could you give us some examples of, or maybe at least one example of how you would do this in your practice so we could have a real sense of it?
Sure. Well, we recently, yesterday actually, saw a follow-up of a young woman in our teaching clinic. This is a young woman who is a massage therapist, and she has asthma and is on some medications, some steroid medications for the asthma. So both, you know, those are two things that could really interfere with C potencies because she's, A, taking steroid inhalers, and, B, because she's a massage therapist, you know, she's working with some essential oils and that sort of thing that, you know, might be some sort of problem. So we gave her a remedy. We actually gave her Kali Sulf because she's an Asian young woman, and she's living in Santa Cruz, and she's living a very new age type lifestyle. She teaches yoga and does massage and lives with a boyfriend that she's not married to, and, you know, living more of a new age type lifestyle, but she comes from an extremely traditional family, and she's very, in a lot of ways, very still attached to that family and very proper in a certain way. But on the other hand, she's living this very, you know, alternative lifestyle according, you know, how her family would see it. And so she's got a lot of emotional issues about her whole family. She's the youngest child in a very big family, and so it's like nobody understands her, and she feels very misunderstood and not understood by her parents. But, you know, the main thing was the asthma, of course. So we gave her the remedy in an LM potency. This was last June, so it looks like it's been about 7 months at this point. And slowly, you know, her issues are clearing up. First of all, the asthma is continually getting better, and she's been able to go way down on her steroids. And before, even on the higher doses of the steroids, she was constantly wheezing and uncomfortable. Now she's very, very comfortable and has lowered her steroid use dramatically. And her emotional life has completely changed. She's now much more comfortable with being able to express herself with her family. She's happy. She's self-accepting. And it's just been remarkable to watch her blossom and kind of start feeling comfortable in her own skin. So, you know, we didn't have to worry about the steroids or the essential oils or anything because it was an LM, and there were no aggravations because it's been an LM. So, you know, the LM potencies have worked really, really well for her.
Fantastic. So, Willow, with regards to, you know, I mean, I know that homeopathy, the real key to homeopathy is long-term case management.
Yes.
You know, at the end of this course of treatment with the LM potencies, like how do you finish it? How do you know when to stop? How do you end that, complete the case in these situations using LMs?
Well, you know, that always is the hard point. And there are a few ways that I do it. As, you know, I mentioned earlier, sometimes there is that aggravation that Hahnemann mentions, and when you stop the remedy, everything's fine and you don't have to do anything else. A lot of times there, a new symptom picture will come up, and we do the classic zigzagging, where we know we probably didn't get the simulum that first time, but the remedy helped to a certain point, and there are more symptoms. You know, the original symptoms are pretty much resolved, but then there are another group of symptoms that haven't resolved, so we will move on to another remedy. And, you know, sometimes I will go ahead, especially people sometimes feel a little insecure when they've been on an LM for a long time. I have a client this week that I dealt with that. He had had some dramatic improvements on an LM that from some neurological symptoms that he had had since birth, basically. And I kept him on the LM for a year. And then I decided it was time. He had been so stable and doing so great that I decided that it was time to see what else we could do. So, and the LMs were getting pretty expensive. We were up to, he was on belladonna, so he was burning through potencies about every 3 weeks. And so we were pretty up there in the potencies, and it was getting pretty expensive for him. So I did give him a single dose of a 1M just to see if that would hold for him. And I think it will, although for him there was a little bit of a psychological anxiety about the whole thing because the remedy had done so much for him. He almost, you know, he didn't want to give it up. And I wasn't able totally to sort out how much of this was emotional and how much of it was his body saying it still wanted it. So I decided just to give it a try since he hadn't had any symptoms, zero symptoms for a year. Figured it would be okay. So it is a little bit of trial and error since we don't have all that many guidelines for these kinds of things, especially for very long-term and very deep kinds of issues. But But those are some of the ways I handle it anyway.
Are there any particular books that you like for the LM potencies, Willa, that you think are especially useful? Or,
you know, the only book I ever read was The Organon about it, and the way I actually started using LM potencies was when I was in school, and we were reading Hahnemann, and it said right there this was his most perfected method, and I thought, well, okay, if it's the most perfected method, that's the one I'm going to use. So I've always used them. I do like the works of Luc de Schepper quite a bit. I've just started to become familiar with them because
The new book in particular is
Achieving and Maintaining the Synonym.
Yeah, have you read that one?
I've looked at it, and I like it quite a bit.
Yeah,
I haven't read it thoroughly.
Yeah.
And I like Hahnemann Revisited as well. I mean, I like a lot of his work, and I think those are definitely worth reading. It's interesting, in his chapter on LMs, he does actually say he'd like to hear from practitioners who are using the little dropper bottle method, because he hadn't really gone so much into that and didn't know if it was really as effective. He didn't think it would be. But, you know, I didn't notice a problem with results when I switched over to the little dropper bottle method, and I've been doing it now for about 10 years. So I'm happy with what I'm doing. That's really all I can say. And I'm sure to do it the traditional method is probably the best way to do it, but it's just with the practical side of people taking things around in their purses, and it's complicated enough to ask them to keep it away from their cell phone and that sort of thing. But
then
give them all these extra directions about this many spoonfuls and stirring it this many times, it just gets complicated.
Right. For those of you who are on the call who want more information about that title, it's Dr. Luc de Schepper, DESCHEPPER. And if you want more information about that, you can call toll-free 866-599-5950 and ask for Allison, and she knows all about that title. She can give you more information about it. It really is an excellent book on case management and follow-up with using LM potencies. Willa, I thought maybe I could just talk about something outside of LM potencies, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Yeah. I know you're a CHC board member, and I understand that the distance learning standards have changed recently, and I thought perhaps you could tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. In the past, you were only allowed to get 50% of your classroom hours via distance learning if you wanted to apply for taking the exam for CHC certification. And that has now been upped to 90%. So out of 500 classroom hours that you need, you can get up to 450 of those hours via distance learning. So this offers a tremendous opportunity to people who are in remote places and don't have the ability to travel to some of the established schools to get their education. Because basically what you need now is 50 hours of on-site training, and that you could get in a couple of weekend seminars. So this allows students to do most of their training at home via distance learning and then just go to a couple of seminars at some point. These can be seminars in your own area. It's not required that you actually travel to the school that you're studying with. So it really opens up a lot of opportunities for people who otherwise would not be able to study homeopathy. And it's really very timely because you can get law degrees and nursing degrees and psychology degrees and practically everything else via distance learning. So it was really time, and the CHC recognized that it was time to, you know, get with the program in terms of other educational areas and other professions who already accept distance learning.
So this really could have a very big impact for us. I mean, in terms of
I believe so, because the problem, I mean, one of the things that I think is the problem for homeopathy is that we simply don't have enough practitioners. That's
sure.
why homeopathy is not well enough known. We need more competent practitioners, and we need them all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
So by allowing distance learning, we're allowing more people to become proficient at homeopathy.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, it is best to go and sit in a class and have that whole kind of interaction. That's the best way to do it.
Sure.
But if you can't do it, this is a good way to go. And distance learning technology is getting more and more sophisticated. And
sure.
we have things, you know, like the Homeopathic Symposium that allows people to, you know, view cases and get input from the practitioners at the same time. And it's all becoming a much more sophisticated subject. It's not the way the old correspondence courses were, where you just
sure.
sort of sent a stack of papers and you never talked to anybody or you never
sure.
had interaction. There's a lot of interaction. There's a lot of multimedia involved. So, you know, the programs, I think, will continue to improve, and the education can be very, very good.
This is seems like a very exciting development.
Yes.
Sharing with us about that. So I'm going to go ahead now and unmute the lines and
okay.
allow those people who are participating to ask their own questions. I'm sure that you've given them lots of food for thought, and there should be some really interesting questions. Let me just, before I do that, mention for those people who would like to find out more about the Homeopathic Symposium, there is a website, www.homeopathicsymposium, all one word, .com. So www.homeopathicsymposium.com. That's the site that Willa mentioned. I believe actually Willa uses that site in her own distance learning program.
Yes, we do. I have a case on it, and I also am using it as part of our practicum module.
Fantastic.
So that, yeah, it's a wonderful resource.
Fantastic. And as I had mentioned at the beginning of the call, for those of you who didn't hear, Willa's both on-site and distance learning program are some of the best homeopathic training you can get in North America. For those of you who want more information about that, the toll-free number is 1-800-396-9778, and the website is, the email is Willa, W-I-L-L-A, at homeopathyhome.net. Okay, so Willa, thank you again so much. Let me unmute the lines and let the people ask you their own questions. Hold on.
Hi,
everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Padmini.
Wow.
Hello, Willa. How do you mix your LMs? Are you putting a few granules in 4 ounces of water?
I'm putting a few granules in a small, several dram. How many drams is that? 5 dram, perhaps. It's the largest bottle that I can get that I can put a little dropper thing on from my bottle company. I think it's about 5 grams. So it's not 4 ounces. I'm putting a few pellets in the little bottle that I use.
An ounce?
It might be about an ounce. You know, I don't actually measure it. I just put the water in the bottle.
Are you adding alcohol or just water?
I use a little bit of alcohol as a preservative.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you using brandy?
No, I actually, for a while I used Everclear, but now I'm using vodka.
Okay.
I just use, you know, as pure a white alcohol as I can get. Vodka is distilled several times. The one that I get is distilled something like 4 times or something, so it's pretty pure.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Barbara. I'm from Marin County, and I've been practicing for a while, and just, it's not a question, but one of the things that I wanted to share that I thought might be valuable is that I studied with Sheila Creasy, and one of the ways that she used LMs for people who were on medications, like your patient that had, you know, the steroids for the asthma,
mm-hmm.
is oftentimes she would take them up to a certain point with the LMs until they were able to reduce their medications and eventually come off them, and then she'd start over again at LM1 and find that they would respond really beautifully again to the, you know, going up the ascending potencies of the LMs.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Do you know where Sheila got that? Where she? Got
I think just through her own experience.
Through her own experience.
Yeah.
Great.
This is Margaret in Maryland, and I have a question. Willa, how do you know when to increase the LM potency?
Well, I do it routinely, every 6 weeks or so, unless there's a reason not to. For example, they're aggravating. But I will just go up routinely, or unless they start falling off the remedy before I'm ready to bring them up. So generally, when I do a follow-up, which is usually every 5 or 6 weeks, if they seem to be doing pretty well and haven't had any aggravations, I will give them another bottle of the remedy to hold on to and tell them that they can switch if they feel like they're plateauing, or when the remedy runs out, they can switch.
Willa, when you're saying, you know, take a few drops, do you start out saying, succussit twice, take one drop? Or, you know, if they aggravate, what are you doing there?
That's a very good question. Generally, I'll tell them to succussit 3 to 5 times. And I will tell them to take 2 to 3 drops. But I definitely have clients, you know, if people do start to aggravate, there are so many different ways we can deal with it. We can reduce the drop amount of drops. We can reduce the amount of succussions. We can have them put it in a little bit of water, swish it around, and just take a sip. We can take that first glass, take a couple of drops out of that glass, put it in a second glass, and have them swish it around. So there are a great variety of different ways to deal with any kind of aggravation. But in general, the general instructions I give, as I said, are 3 to 5 succussions and 2 to 3 drops. But people, you know, will find out for themselves sometimes. They'll tell me, well, if I take one drop, I do great. But if I take 2 drops, I aggravate. And I find that really amazing. But people do develop sensitivities and often will discover for themselves what works the best. But I'll give them different kinds of suggestions until we figure it out. But that kind of sensitivity is not common, you know. But when you get it, there's a lot of different ways to deal with it.
Are you always moving people from LM1 to LM2 and then 3 in series like that specifically?
Yes. Okay. I always go 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera, and go in order, and that's the way Hahnemann suggested, and that's the way I've always done it. I don't skip around.
And you always start with LM1, Willa?
Yes, unless I don't have an LM1 for some reason, in which case sometimes I'll start with an LM2. When I moved about 4 years ago, my whole LM1 kit got fried because my son left it in the trunk of my car on a very hot day when we were moving. And so there are some remedies I do start people on an LM2, but I don't find that that causes any difficulty.
Okay.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Hi. Willa? Mm-hmm. What water do you use? Does it have to be distilled water, or does it have to be tap water?
I have a reverse osmosis system, and I use reverse osmosis water, which is similar to distilled in that it's very highly purified. But, you know, using spring water, in the past I've used spring water. I've used water out of carbon charcoal filters, and I haven't noticed that one of them didn't work. They all seem to work. I wouldn't use plain old tap water, but, you know, I think you could go and buy bottled water if it were a good quality spring water, or distilled water would be fine as well. Problem with distilled is it'll actually leach things out of the plastic that it's kept in. So, because it doesn't have any minerals in it, so that's a little bit of a problem.
Container is not a good.
Yeah, plastic leaches into chemicals into water.
Yeah, well, if you have
the water would be good. My eyes are watering. It was good chicken though.
Willa.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a suppressed skin case, you know,
yeah,
on steroids a long time, or
yeah,
like a Crohn's case where they've been on steroids.
Yes.
How will you start that case with an LM?
Well, I would start with an LM1 if you were really worried, especially if it was something like Crohn's. You could start by having them put those drops, put one or two drops in a quarter cup of water, swish it around, and take a little sip. Or you could even start by having them sniff it. If you were really concerned, if they've been on heavy steroids and they're just coming off. But I've had cases like that, and in general, just the normal thing that I do, the LM1 with a couple of drops on the tongue seems to be okay. Haven't had, you know, bad reactions. Also because at that point their vital force is so suppressed that you're not likely with an LM to get immediate reactions, bad reactions. That's my experience anyway. I haven't had any cases blow up in my face with LMs like that.
Willa, do you use olfaction?
You know, occasionally I do. Not that much, but if somebody's really sensitive, I will. I will give it a try.
Yeah, to say for people who don't know, olfaction is to smell the remedies and not actually take them. Okay, let me have to open it up.
You said that you were seeing, you know, your follow-ups 5 to 6 weeks, but one of the things that I've noticed and I've, you know, heard other practitioners say is that you really have to be in contact a lot more with your patient in the beginning because of this adjusting the dose until they get it kind of at the right level. How do you manage that?
You know, I don't find that to be so much the case. I give out a sheet called the Homeopathic Healing Process. It's a little article that I wrote that kind of explains the different things that can happen. And they have another sheet that explains to them when they can call me or when they should call me. But in general, I don't find that I need to do all that much fine-tuning and that they will, because of the information I give them, they will call if they're getting any kind of aggravation. But in general, over 90% of people do really well just taking the LM once a day, and occasionally if somebody's in a real crisis type situation, I'll have them take their LM1 twice a day in the beginning. So yeah, that hasn't been a problem for me.
Willie, is that sheet that you use, that you wrote up, is that available anywhere?
You know, I don't have it online or anything. I have it in my course. If anybody wanted it, they could go ahead and email me and I could get them a copy.
Okay, great. Other questions?
Oh, yes, I have a question.
Yes, please. Very basic question, Willa. I still didn't understand the difference between C potenti aqueous and LM1.
Between C potency what?
In aqueous dilution in water?
Oh, okay.
An
LM1 is prepared from a 3C.
3C?
Yeah, and then it's put in 50,000 drops of water. So that's the difference.
How do you count your 50,000 drops?
Well, it's estimated. The directions are in the Organon. It's a certain amount of ounces or something like that.
Okay. And when you do a 6C... you put a few granules in a glass of water, what do you get compared to an LM?
You know, I don't, like I said, I don't really have a good comparison between Cs and LMs. I've seen them written, but I don't know how accurate they are. But because an LM1 is made from a 3C, you know, a 6C is probably kind of similar to an LM1, I would just say in theory.
So if I take a 3C and put in a glass of water, I got an LM1?
That's basically an LM1 if you dilute it enough. Uh-huh. And I don't have the numbers. If you look at the organon, those paragraphs around 247, et cetera, when he started.
And you don't put any alcohol?
Well, I do in my little, in the bottles I give people.
Yes, in the little bottle. And you have succussion to do?
Yes, I do succussion.
How many succussion when you do an LM1? From a 3C?
You do it every day.
Okay, and
I have the people, as I said earlier, do it 3 to 5 times a day.
Oh, okay, I understand. You do it after.
But, you know, Hahnemann has a way of preparing them where he actually uses fewer succussions than he would for a C.
Okay.
Potency. But, you know, the ones I get are already prepared.
Technically, you use more succussions when you're making LMs than you would normally for making Cs.
I think it's fewer. I can't remember the exact amount, but...
It's fewer also.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
There was somebody back there who was trying to ask a question.
More questions.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Part of my, I never use LMs, only Cs, and part of my evaluation is the, and then the follow-up is whether they had a aggregation or not. I use that to know. How can you tell if it's being a suppression or if it's actually working if you're not evaluating whether there's a aggravation or not?
Yeah, well, that's the thing with people using C potencies is they're used to looking for the aggravation, and that's exactly why Hahnemann switched to LM potencies is because he didn't want the aggravation. And I think that's a hard thing for a practitioner who's been always looking for the aggravation as a sign that the remedy is working. I do see return of old symptoms. I do see, you know, that happening on an emotional level, that sometimes things will come up that they hadn't thought about for a while, et cetera. You know, so you do see a healing process occur, but it doesn't necessarily have to be an aggravation. It can be a healing process where things are gradually getting better on all levels. And when things are gradually getting better on all levels, that's not a suppression. If somebody's emotionally better, if their energy is better, if their symptoms are disappearing, that's a healing. That's not a suppression. So that's what I look for.
All right, let's have one final question.
Quick question.
Go ahead.
Oh, hi, this is Susan from Texas. I'm wondering, when a person's taking a remedy every day, do you have a preference of the time of day, or does it change depending on the remedy? Or
that's an excellent question. Yeah, people who have sleep trouble and the remedy doesn't overstimulate them, I will have them take it at night if it's only once a day. You know, people with the opposite kind of problem, they have problems with energy, they have problems getting going, then I will have them take it in the morning. So it depends. There are people who have sleep trouble who find that the remedy stimulates them at night, so because it kind of stimulates their vital force and makes them not sleepy, in which case I'll take it in the morning. But that's one of the ways I make a determination as to when to take it is what their major issues are and when the remedy could work best. In general, it's nice when people take the remedy at night because at night they're not going to be exposed to all kinds of stimulation and chemicals and things that might antidote or distract them. And also, you know, the body is healing while they sleep. So in general, as just a rule of thumb, night is always a good time.
Great.
Unless it's overstimulating.
Great. Well, Willa, this was a wonderful call full of very valuable advice and information and wisdom. I want to just personally thank you, and I'm going to unmute and help, let everyone thank you personally as well. Hold on. Can we get a big thank you for Willa?
Thank you, Willa.
Thank you. Well, you're all very welcome. I hope it was useful.
Yeah.
Thanks, Willa. Willa, talk to you soon.
Very interesting.
Okay.
Take care. Thank you again.
Bye.
Tim? Hello?
Is Willa still on? No?
Tim, are you still there? Hello? Does anybody know whether LM potencies are available commercially?
From where?
Can you buy it?
Yes, you can. You can buy from Hahnemann Labs.
Oh, you can buy from Hahnemann Labs?
Yeah. Comes in liquid already in dropper bottles, and then you can dilute from there.
You can also get it through Deliso's.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. And does anybody know the other method of, you know, patient taking out and diluting it every day? I didn't get that point.
You put a few granules of the LM potency in 4 ounces of water, and then you have them succuss it. I always start them out with 2 succussions, and then they take 1 teaspoon from that stock bottle and put it in 4 ounces of water in a glass, stir 10 seconds, and take 1 teaspoon.
Mm. Yeah, that's the formal directions, yes.
No, right. What do they do? They come as a liquid, right?
If you order it from Hahnemann Labs already made up, then it comes already made for you.
Already made. And you take 1 teaspoon of that?
No.
Yeah.
You then dilute from there. You take a couple of drops.
You take a couple of drops and
put that in 4 ounces of water and stir.
It depends on how she has it made at the lab, if she has it made into drops or the 4 ounce bottle.
You're talking about the triturated remedy. You talked about grains, putting grains in water.
Well, if she orders it already made from Hahnemann Lab, I believe they can make it up so that it can be used as drops.
I guess what I have used is from that bottle. I've diluted further. And
so you're taking the 4 ounce bottle?
It's a 1 ounce bottle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
When I have clients, if I don't have the LM, you know, that they need, I just have them call Hahnemann Lab and they just send it to them already made in a 4 ounce bottle.
I have gotten 4 ounce bottles, but the one
that one they can take it directly, like Willa said, or do they have to dilute it further?
Well, the 4 ounce bottle, the proper way to take it is 1 teaspoon in 4 ounces of water in another glass.
Mm-hmm.
You take 1 teaspoon in 4 ounces of water.
Right. Stir it 10 seconds and take a teaspoon of that.
And what do you do with the rest of it?
Throw it out?
Keep it to the plant. I have a question for you, and that is, I was taught to stir in one direction and then stir in the other direction.
Yeah, I've heard both.
Mm-hmm. I instruct to stir 10 one direction and then 10 the other.
What do you stir with?
Something you can sterilize, like a metal, some use metal spoon, others use plastic.
Right.
What do you suggest?
They work both ways.
Either way.
Yeah.
And I want to answer the other woman's question. The reason that you throw it out, the reason that you throw out the 4 ounce glass of water that you've taken a teaspoonful of, because you want to go back to the stock bottle and succuss it before you take any more. So that's why you just discard what you've just made for yourself in the 4 ounces of water.
You can't take all of it.
Well, no.
You really don't want to do that.
Do you know why not?
If you have, because you're actually getting more remedied, that's a good question. Luke DeShepper puts that in his book. You know, it does matter how much you take. Because I had one guy just think he was going to drink a half a glass of Orem LM1, which he did, and he was okay. But what were we talking about? Oh, I will have them keep their glass if they're working through a migraine or something where they might be repeating it once an hour.
Do they have to stir it or can they succuss it once they put it in the glass?
I think you could do both.
You could do either one.
It splashes out, though, in the glass.
In an open glass, it will fly around if you try to succuss that.
Yeah. You have to do it really carefully.
Maybe cover it with something and it can succuss it, right?
Yeah, I think if you're trying to stretch it, you just want to put it into another bottle with the water and then just be able to continue succussing it if you were needing to stretch it.
I succuss the bottle before I take out the teaspoon.
Yeah, but then what would happen to your original stock bottle?
That's right. To the individual patients, that's what they do as opposed to.
Can I ask one more question? I'm not quite clear. When you order the 4 ounce bottles, you take out a few drops in 4 ounces of water, or a teaspoon.
A teaspoon.
What is this few drops? That is a different...
Yeah. Well, I know when I was living down in Australia, they did the drops.
Uh-huh. And it just came in a little 1 ounce bottle.
1 ounce bottle. This is a bigger bottle.
Yes, this is 4 ounces.
This is 4 ounce bottle.
Right.
Well, I was talking about using the 1 ounce bottle for patients that she would make up from her stock because it was easier for people to simply put those drops under their tongue instead of taking a teaspoon stock bottle and putting in water and then stirring it and then taking a teaspoon of that and then throwing the rest out. So she said that it was more convenient for people and that there's less, can you use that word, more patient compliance and more consistent taking of the remedy when people had less to do and less to mess up and think about.
So I've had some other training with homeopathic veterinarians with the LMs, and one of the things that they have found works a lot better for them is when they're making the original 4 ounces of their original LM, they actually place it in an 8 ounce bottle. So they're still using only the 4 ounces of water with a little alcohol to preserve it, but they're putting that into an 8 ounce bottle so that when they succuss it, there's enough room in the bottle to actually energize and bring it to the next level. And they've said that with the animals, they've seen a big difference in using 4 ounces LM in a 4 ounce bottle versus using 4 ounces LM in an 8 ounce bottle. I wondered if anybody that's on the line right now had, I was kind of surprised that Willow was, you know, speaking about using 1 ounce of fluid for her patients in the dropper bottle in a 1 ounce bottle, not a 2 ounce bottle, to give space for the actual succussion to take place.
I hadn't heard that before.
I attend the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy. I attend their annual meetings, and I've been to some of their other training sessions. So this is like some of the top veterinarians in the United States.
It's the Academy of
Veterinary Homeopathy.
I have a question. Is a dram 4 cc's, when she says a 5-dram bottle, would that be like a 20-milliliter bottle or 4 teaspoons?
Oh, 4 dram. Know. Dram is a dry weight. Wait, I have my...
No, that's a gram. I think a dram is 4 cc's, but I could be wrong. And if it is, then she's using a 20cc bottle or a 4-teaspoon bottle.
Yeah.
Or an ounce and a third bottle.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
So you're saying that there's...
Five grams is about a third of an ounce.
Here's a conversion. One decagram. Oh, gram, sorry, dram.
D-R-A-M.
Yeah.
I think it is 4 cc's.
So you're suggesting that there's extra room in the bottle?
No. Well, if she's using a 2-ounce bottle, there is. There's like 2/3 of an ounce.
Empty.
Yeah.
Which would go hand in hand with what I've been taught.
May I ask a question?
Here's a, 8 fluid drams is 1 fluid ounce.
8 fluid drams. Is 1 ounce.
It's a 1/8 of.
Oh, she says she's using 5 drams.
That's small.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's really small. I don't think, because she said she uses the big dropper. That sounds more like a 2 ounce bottle she's using.
I was trying to figure out what size bottle that you think she's using. You think she's using a 2 ounce bottle? This is the only way to go. I've been doing the other one for a long time. You think she's using 1 ounce fluid?
It will explain that. You said you've been doing this a long time, using a 2 ounce bottle with 1 ounce of liquid?
No, I was using the other way. I was working with Dr. Luke, and we were using the 4 ounce. But this is so much simpler. I mean,
I'm sorry, you were using a 4 ounce bottle and 4 ounces of fluid in it?
But I went back, I'm down to the dropper. Are we coming out with the fact that it's, I've been listening to you, this is incredible. All right, we use 1 ounce fluid, is that what she's saying?
Well, we don't know what 5 grams is.
She thinks
she's using 5 drams.
See, what somebody said 8 drams is 1 ounce. So it is 5/8 of an ounce.
That's a tiny, tiny bottle.
That is.
It's not even an ounce then.
Right, maybe she's using a 1 ounce bottle, which is what they used in Australia. Mm-hmm. And they said just go between 1 and 10 drops.
Do you remember when she said she uses the smallest bottle that will fit a dropper head?
No, she uses the largest bottle that'll hold a dropper head.
Well, I thought she said the smallest.
No, the largest.
Yes.
That the dropper will fit into, which is a 1 ounce bottle, as far as...
Yeah.
That's how long the glass cube is. It fits almost to the bottom of the 1 ounce.
Yeah.
It can also go in the 2 ounce bottle, too.
Yeah, but it won't go to the bottom, which she said was she uses the smallest bottle she can find that fits the dropper.
Unless she's got a bigger dropper.
Yeah. She actually said the largest bottle that will fit her dropper.
I guess we need to know how long our dropper is.
You can't have a long dropper for a 2 ounce bottle, that's true. Other questions.
Anyway,
this would have been good to know.
Is the person still on the phone who said that they worked with Dr. Luke?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. What size bottle did Dr. Luke use, may I please ask?
Well, we used a different method completely.
Right, I realize that.
Yeah. Well, I always just use, I get a 4 ounce bottle.
And you would fill it with 4 ounces of fluid?
4 ounces, yeah.
Okay.
But I had thought that myself, that it would succuss so much better if I had half, you know.
Exactly, and that's what I was trained
more.
To use half, was to use 4 ounces in an 8 ounce bottle.
And then he's also used an 8 ounce bottle too, but we were doing, something else, I forgot what it was, a different method completely, which was very complicated, and this is really, if we're all busy, this is the best way to go. You know,
right.
Simplicity, and then, you know, be able to go back, well, 2 drops doesn't work, well, maybe 1. But yeah, I didn't get her email.
Oh,
Willa?
Did anyone get her
email? I'm on the whole health now.
Willa@homeopathyhome.net. What is it?
Willa@homeopathyhome.net.
Oh, fan.
Willa Homeopathy?
Home.
Home. Homeopathy Home.
Home@.net. Now, when you say this is the easiest, or this seems to be more carefree, can you explain what you understand?
Well, I can explain that I have about 5 or 6 people I do, and it was just, I was just, you know, it was too much. And then when I got a really good tape from the National Center, and it's on homeopathy, and I mean it's on LMs, and it's a woman in Wisconsin, and she's the one who taught, you know, using the 1 drop, the small bottle. That's where I moved to the small bottle just to remain, you know, keep my sanity.
Uh-huh.
I was doing so many people that we use a lot of homeopathy in our family, and when I had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After all these cups and all this, you're going, oh, God.
Yeah, you know, it does get to be a lot. And I'm, it's like wears you out, you know, because
uh-huh.
I do have to check up on people and see what they're doing. And, you know, they do go off and, like, drink half a glass, you know, even though I've told them, you know, they only need a teaspoon. So I'm going to get that handout because it's a lot of patient teaching.
Yeah, that's because she's had success 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
From God, gift from God.
And you know what's nice is that you don't have that glass sitting around. You don't have to worry about some kid, you know, filling it up with Kool-Aid and having a drink out of it. And I always worry about that, you know.
Contamination.
That they accidentally used the glass that the LM potency was in.
Yes. What do you know about, or what do you? How do you practice sterilizing the vessel?
Well, you know, you can put it, well, you can just boil it, but you can also, you know what? I just put it in the microwave and zap it. That will kill everything, you know, and then it's pretty safe.
It's like an autoclave, new age autoclave.
Yeah, and then they just put it in their dishwasher. It's clean after that.
Mm-hmm.
Does microwave, does it do anything to homeopathy?
Yeah, that's why you want to move your remedies to the next room.
Yeah, you want
to... because
to,
I'm saying the container, you know, sterilize it in microwave.
No,
you know.
That's when it's... let's say they use the glass, and I want to make sure the glass is wiped clean of any remedy.
Uh-huh.
I'll just, if it's a glass, just, put, you know, dump it down the sink, put some water in it, put it in the microwave, zap it. That will kill anything, and then just put it in your dishwasher.
Oh. So you don't have to really sterilize it before using it.
No.
No. Just any, can somebody answer me, how long does it take for the LM potency to work?
It can work real quick.
Real quick?
Yeah.
2 to 5 days, the one, the tape that I got.
Uh-huh.
I wish I could think of it right now, but I'm so excited about hearing this. You know, you'll know right away. I have autistic kids.
Uh-huh.
And so waiting a month to see if a remedy is going to work is
fair.
Where are we going? And since they're nonverbal, so this is why it's incredible.
Oh.
And the only thing that I really learned today, and one of the major things, was having it in with my cell phone.
It will wreck your remedy so bad. I kept Arnica in my purse with my, didn't even think about it, the cell phone. It was about 6 years ago, and my daughter needed it to get her, she had teeth extracted, and it didn't work. And for 20 hours, I fiddled with this dead Arnica, and, you know, I thought, gee, this doesn't work, and then it occurred to me. And then I popped open a new bottle, and it worked within a minute.
So even if you have in a different compartment, it doesn't work?
I think it needs to be 2 or 3, at least a yard away from a cell phone.
Yard away from
Because if you put a cell phone on and, you know, it's actually getting microwaves, and you put it next to AM radio in between the channels, put it up to it, it'll start going, and then you just see what the range is by moving it back.
Because even though it's not ringing, it's still receiving if it's on. And so you're attracting the, it's like an antenna, like a lightning rod in a way.
Like if you're receiving a call or you're making a call, it's getting those waves.
Right, because
it's
emitting
off, it's
as
not
well
a
as
problem.
Transmitting and receiving at the same time.
Yeah.
So it is going to affect it.
Yes.
Oh.
And the microwave has about a 3-foot distance on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I really liked was the sound of her voice. All the homeopaths I've dealt with have been so great.
Yeah, they are wonderful.
Robin Murphy. Oh,
I love him.
This is the best part about it. You go into with an autistic kid and they say, I'm going to drug you and that's it. There's no answer. But I've noticed that each of the people, you know, really.
Do you take a lot of autistic?
They take time for you and, like you're taking time for me. Thank you.
Do you treat a lot of autistic kids?
I have two. I've had them for 20 years. Dr. Murphy worked with him and Dr. Luke, and we still, I think we're down to saccharin now.
Oh, you have autistic kids.
I have two. I have a dozen of my own, but this is two, you know, that I've raised.
Oh, okay.
Do you mean saccharinum?
Yes.
They're on saccharinum?
Yes, yeah, sugar.
The remedy made out of sugar?
Yeah.
Because I have an autistic case also, and I tried that. It didn't work. And you know what's crazy? Colocynthis just worked like a dream.
Really?
Yeah. I'm just like...
Colocynthis.
Colocynthis. And 6C dropped in 4 ounces of water. And
but how do you spell colocynthis?
Bitter cucumber. C-O-L-O-C.
Oh.
Y-N-T-H.
Because he was just twisting and... crying and screaming and everything. He was all over the place, and I tried, you know, tarantula and you know, nothing. And then we tried saccharinum, nothing, because he demands cookies. And then she said he's got his face in the pillow, he's on his knees, his bum's in the air, he's twisting all over the place. And then I said, well, we could try colocynthis. It worked. He went from 60 to 90 fits a day to none.
No kidding.
With a 6C and 4 ounces of water. Succussed 7 times. 8 was too many times.
a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Paul Hirschke, I went to a class from him, and he looked at my boy. But we didn't come up with anything. You know, belladonna is not, you know. Our main thing with him is he doesn't sleep at night. He's up 5 or 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
Had him 20 years. That's 20 years.
That's a lot.
But, oh, I love it. I would do anything than use...
Paul wasn't able to help you?
Well, we were in a class, and the whole group of 20-some people decided what, you know, they went through all the remedies that came up on the... Oh, they had the radar.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. But he just... I took my doctor with me, too, so I'll be working with my doctor.
Do any of you have any experience with children shortly after vaccination and the symptomatology that they display?
Yeah. Only a couple cases, and silica was good.
Uh-huh.
Silica is very good for clearing vaccination symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
What type of vaccinations were the children given?
Well, generally, when they're vaccinated, there's a whole host of them. They're given 3 or 4 at a single visit.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Now in both arms.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Both arms, same time.
And the leg. I've seen both arms and one of the thighs in an infant. And this indiscriminate drugging, it's so much for the...
Yeah. How about 2 years? They say 2 years antidote
yeah.
The vaccine.
Isn't it good for MMR?
Yeah. Thuya was really devised originally for the smallpox.
For smallpox
right.
Vaccination, right.
I mean, as
the
far
one that
as,
came from the cow.
You know, clearing symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason why I came to silica, which I never would have thought of in 100,000 years.
We use it for the dogs all the time.
Oh.
It's a very good remedy for clearing vaccinosis.
Well, the symptom that this kid was having was he would get like a seizure that started in the solar plexus and went to the neck, was especially aggravated at a full moon.
Oh.
And it was silica.
Uh-huh.
And I never would have thought he was silica.
Well, he may not have been silica. That may have been what the vaccines did to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can somebody repeat the name of the book?
Dr. Shepherd's book?
What is it?
Maintaining Similimum.
Maintaining Similimum, uh-huh. And what is the author's name?
Luke DeShepper.
Luke Shepherd.
DeShepper.
Luke
D-E. Capital S E S H E P P E R?
Shepherd. Yeah, it's not S C H, right? It's S H.
I don't know. If you go on the Whole Health now, you can find it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, find
if you
it
do
really
a search
easy.
On L U C, Luke, that's his first name,
uh-huh.
It'll come up.
Luke Shepherd.
Yeah, if you, it's D Shepherd.
Okay.
D E Shepherd. But if you just go on the Whole Health now and go into their search engine and do a search on Luke,
mm-hmm.
It'll come up.
Oh, wonderful.
And they also sell his books.
Oh, okay.
And you who are working with the vet, where are you from?
I'm in Miami.
Uh-huh.
And I'm Kim's executive assistant.
Oh.
So I work for Whole Health now as well.
Oh, it's wonderful.
But I'm learning
the work
from you
doing.
Guys. I appreciate you staying on the phone. I love all of this.
We can do an informal conference call after the conference.
You know.
Yeah. And sometimes they cut us off. So
I know. We're lucky.
There
could
be any moment now where the phones just go dead.
Yeah.
That happens.
Well,
so
Whole Health now.
Do.
And nice having, you know, allowing us to talk some more.
I know.
You know,
great.
We could not ask all the questions now.
Yeah, and it doesn't cost the company any extra money for us
oh,
to stay on the
good.
Phone other than your personal phone call. Who am I talking to now that you know who you're speaking with in Miami with the vets? Because I work a lot with veterinarians.
Oh, what's your name?
Patty Mount.
Patty Mount. This is Padmini. I'm from upstate New York.
Hi.
I'm Betty Jaluzak from Lancaster.
And I'm Anna Strong from Farmington Hills, Michigan.
I'm Sharon Kimmelman from New York.
Well,
thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for everything you're doing
blessing.
At Whole Health now. It's
okay.
Just so
thank
spectacular.
You.
Wonderful. Thank
I'll
you.
I'll pass
thanks,
that
everyone,
along.
For
yeah.
your help.
And I really appreciate everybody staying on the phone because I learned a lot from this phone call tonight. I think this call from Willa more than any of the other calls.
Yeah, it was so good.
I've had.
Because, you know, the funny thing is we learned, well, I learned fourth edition of Organon, but we were required to read the sixth, and I kept saying to myself, this isn't making sense. We're not changing the potency every time we give a C potency,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I just went out on my own and got the book from...
I actually do.
You actually do what?
I change the potency because I always put it in water after the first dose. I always put it in water and succuss.
You mean the C potency?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that too. But, you know, for the first, like, 3 years, I just thought, it sure ties your hands up if you just work with C and don't drop it in water.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
So if you put it in water and succuss it, you increase the potency.
Or you just change it a bit.
You just change it a little, you know.
Oh.
Or you just stir it once you put it in the water.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Is that enough? Is that enough similar to succussing, is stirring?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you find?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, I actually put it in one of the bottles and succuss.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And make sure if people are dropping their pellets in water, tell them that the remedy's on the outside of it so they don't have to stir it until the pellet disappears because they might stir it 1,000 times, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Very, very, very astute, yeah.
So I say, you know, you can actually just pull that, after you stir it 10 seconds, you can actually take that pellet out and throw it away
mm-hmm.
because the remedy's already got the water.
Right.
Or the water's already got the remedy, sorry.
Exactly.
Stick your fingers in there.
Now.
I have a question for the vet. You know, when you treat an animal, you give it straight away. I mean, I've heard some people say put it in their drinking bowl, but that kind of scares me because they keep getting a dose over and over and over again.
Yeah, the vets don't do that. I've never heard a vet do that.
What do? You administer with a dropper and squirt it in?
Well, generally, just put the pellets in their mouth. Put it under the... between the lip and the gum,
uh-huh,
like when
uh-huh.
they're resting on their side, so it's easy to just raise their lip
yes.
and put a couple of pellets there, and then close their mouth,
mm-hmm.
and don't let them. Some of the dogs like to kind of lick around and try and push it out.
Uh-huh.
The other thing I try and do is always use the really small pellets.
Oh, yeah.
I don't use, like the Boron pellets that you can get, you know, like at GNC, those pellets are really big. I don't use those for the animals. I use the really small pellets.
Try to crush those. And do you know a safe and effective way of doing that without antidoting it?
Some people crush it, but they put it on a piece of paper and fold the paper in half and
A
spoon above it and, like, you know, crush it, like rock the spoon back and forth.
Yes.
And then they can just take the paper and do like what I'm saying, empty it between the lip and the gum.
The gum, I've done that, and it works wonderfully. Because it doesn't alert the animal. They're, like you said, they're in the resting state. You don't have to open their mouth and get them all annoyed.
And then if you're using LMs, the other thing we do is we take, I don't know the right term for it, but it's a needle without the needle point.
Just a syringe.
It's just a syringe,
yeah.
Right. And you can get like a 3cc syringe
mm-hmm.
so that you're just pulling in 1cc.
Ah.
And just shoot it in the dog's mouth.
Yes.
So that's how we do LMs.
Mm-hmm.
Or water dosing. Is with that. And then I would put it in a pot of boiling water after each use.
Uh-huh. Oh, excellent.
And that doesn't melt the rubber
no.
or anything?
No, mm-hmm. because I'm not boiling it. I put it in a pot of boiling water
mm-hmm.
and then pull it out
mm-hmm.
with tongs and rinse it with cool water. No,
mm-hmm.
I've never had that happen.
I have given my dog remedies before, and she spits them out, but they still work. You know, I think once it just makes that contact.
How do you put it in her mouth? Like I'm suggesting between the lip and the gum?
No. I would just stick it on her tongue, and, of course,
okay.
She would spit it out.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what happens to my dog,
too. Next time you want
to
dose your dog, try and, you know, look for a situation where she's resting on her side, so
mm-hmm.
her head is on her side rather than resting on her chin, that it's actually resting on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And just lift her lip up
mm-hmm.
and place one or two pellets
like
between
back
the lip and the gum.
Area.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and she probably won't spit it out.
And she probably won't be able to get to it.
Yeah.
Could I ask one quick question, because you have a lot of experience with animals?
Yeah.
My dog, I have a black lab, he's terribly scared of thunderstorms. It means he's 100% scared. You know, he goes in heights and places, his
yeah.
hands.
One of
and
the
I
things,
tried several things.
Okay, one of the things that you can do is the flower remedies.
Uh-huh.
Rock rose.
Rock rose?
Rock rose
uh-huh.
is for extreme fear.
Mm-hmm.
It may help settle him down some.
Uh-huh.
And as far as homeopathy, you know, you need to take a case on the dog. So I couldn't just do that over the phone real quick.
Yeah, oh, okay. Based on his symptoms, I tried phosphorus.
Yeah,
I tried arsenic.
Is usually the number one choice, but
yes.
It really, the symptoms have to match.
Yeah, and then his symptoms, because of the symptoms, palpitation, salivation, I tried arsenic. It helped a little bit, then it didn't help.
Yeah, like I said, you really have to take a case,
okay.
just like any other case.
Okay.
But you may want to get the flower remedy.
Rock rose
is for extreme fear.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in the flower remedy, impatience. You can mix up to 5 remedies at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So those would be the 2 that I would go for first.
What is it? Rock rose is one. What is the other one?
Impatience.
Impatience.
The flower impatience.
Oh, okay.
I have a question. My dog loves to lick the tile floor. Is that a vitamin deficiency?
I don't know. What do you wash the tile floor with? Maybe your dog likes whatever it is you're using on the tile floor.
You know, it's only in the shower room. So I don't know if it's like steam condensing on the floor or...
Could it be sensation?
Condensation?
It could be, but you know what's really good to use on tile?
Huh.
Is apple cider vinegar
uh-huh.
for cleaning. So you might want to try that and see if it deters her or what effect that has on her
mm-hmm.
To give you a better clue as to if it's something with moisture or taste or if you're feeling like it's actually that she's going after the material that the tile is made from, that would give you a better clue
mm-hmm.
because most dogs, you know, wouldn't like the flavor of apple cider vinegar, and it's actually a good thing for you to use to clean the tile.
Right.
So you would still get benefit because there's a lot of, it's good for killing bacteria, fungus, viral, you know, all of the above. So
mm-hmm.
it would have the cleansing effect,
mm-hmm.
but not have a good taste, and it would probably give you a better indication of why the dog is doing this.
Mm. Yes, that will be interesting.
When you give remedy to a pet, is it okay to touch the remedy with your finger?
No.
How do you administer in the lip and the gum?
The same way I do with a person, with the cap.
With the cap?
Yes, I do. Either that or you can put it into a creased paper
uh-huh.
and, you know, let it roll
okay.
off the paper.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, you can put it in a little bit of water and put it on a teaspoon. It depends on the dog.
Okay.
And put it in the dog's mouth.
Okay. That's
or you can use the syringe.
Okay.
All right. There's a few different choices.
Okay. Sounds good.
Now, I've just used my fingers, and it worked just fine. And she had eaten chocolate. So I know she was...
Oh, good doggy.
It helped her, you know.
Oh, you were really happy that day.
So the pulsatilla just pulled her out of it. good. Mm. She was, and I touched that with my fingers. It worked.
Mm-hmm. Is this the same dog you used the silica on?
No.
For the vaccine?
No, that was a child.
Okay. Sorry.
No, she, no, the, my dog is a pulse sativa.
Mm-hmm.
So I always touched her remedies, and they seem to work.
Okay. I think we've all been trained not to touch remedies, so.
Yeah, I don't touch other people's remedies, but I touch my dog's remedies.
Okay.
But that's good to know. Gosh.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Yes, thank you. Well, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
I'm
going to
go.
Have a great night, and I'll relay your thanks to Kim.
Thank you.
Okay.
So great.
Thank you.
Great.
We all agree. That's why Kim does it.
Oh. Whole Health Now is just killer. I mean, you know, they do everything so good.
Thank you.
So thanks for the good work. It sure is pushing along homeopathy in a very, you know, positive direction.
We try. That's, you know, that's our basis. It really and truly is.
Yeah, it's really, you know, what is it? Like setting the bar.
Aw, thank you very much.
You know, so thanks again. And you have a lovely evening.
You too, and Happy New Year, everybody. Healthy New Year.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, y'all.
Just now, ain't it?
Yep.
Oh, shit. I didn't hear the whole thing of it.
Well, the 4-ounce bottle, the proper way to take it is one teaspoon and 4 ounces of water in another glass.
Mm-hmm. So you take one teaspoon and then 4 ounces of water.
Right.
Oh. They went over.
Super toddler.